Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Alessia Russo and Ella Toon. Name a more iconic duo for United Women. I'll wait.
Given away to Toon, who looks for Russo. And Manchester United could be in business. Indeed they are.
But you can't see them play together at Manchester United anymore. So why did United lose Russo? Will Earps leave too? What's going on behind the scenes? Thanks to The Athletic's special report, we've got some answers for you. I'm Sophie Penny, and from The Athletic, this is Full Time Europe. After finishing second last season, Man United are fourth and pretty much out of the Champions League spots. Now they have to beat Chelsea to reach an FA Cup final, so it's a tall order. We covered the takeover by new co-owner Sir Jim Ratcliffe and his company Ineos in January in an episode on this podcast. But a special report has just come out on The Athletic. And in it, Charlotte Harper has now revealed the extent of the issues that Man United will be tackling. So we've got Charlotte with us today on the podcast. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello, Sophie.
I really enjoyed listening to you on Talk of the Devils last week, our Man United men's podcast. Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, it was fun. And we've got a fellow United reporter with us today as well.
We do. It's a full-time debut for The Athletic's Man United correspondent, Dan Sheldon, who also worked on the report. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Sophie. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Thanks for joining us. So, Charlotte, from what you've discovered in this report, would you say, from what you've seen, there's cause for concern at United? You've said before that internally they see the women's team in general as being on track.
Yeah, that's the club perspective, given that they've established themselves as a top four team in a relatively short amount of time. But from an organisational point of view for the women's team, I think there is cause for concern. There's lack of clarity regarding budget and strategy, high level of staff turnover, and an inefficient recruitment process.
Obviously, if people don't know much about Man United Women, they got formed in 2018, didn't they? So that's a key bit of context into where they're at right now. Dan, obviously they're in the process of the Ineos takeover. Where are we at in terms of that takeover right now? Has the review begun?
Yeah, so the Ineos takeover, you know, less of a takeover, more of a minority investment. So they bought a 25% stake in the club, which went through on February the 20th, $1.3 billion. They're now kind of going through all elements of the club at Carrington, at Old Trafford, and, you know, starting these reviews of, be it the men's team, the academy, the women's team. So that's where they're at to with that.
And obviously we've known for a while that there's been some dissatisfaction with Man United Women. And Dan, you've written on this, haven't you, about kind of fans not being able to chant about Mark Skinner. I mean, are Ineos reviewing him as well?
Well, I mean, he will certainly be part of the process, right? He's out of contract come the summer. I think Charlotte alluded to Mark Skinner and his future in her brilliant report. The same way they're going to be looking at Erik ten Hag, they're going to be looking at Mark Skinner and the job he's doing. We did a piece on The Athletic when United were in Malta. I spoke to some fans out there and they were kind of chanting for Skinner to go, and were told by a club official to stop singing that, which is quite remarkable, really. I think the fans, or certainly some fans, have made their mind up on Skinner, but I don't think Ineos are going to be swayed by what the fans will think.
It's quite remarkable that they weren't allowed to sing that, and that came from the club. I suppose it's a sign of kind of things going wrong behind the scenes, and that's what your report talks about, doesn't it, Charlotte? Let's start with the signings, because I think everyone at Man United was gutted when Alessia Russo left the club. And in your report, you give a few more details about kind of why that might have happened.
Yes, so according to sources that we spoke to close to the club, during the January transfer window, United shook hands on a deal for Alessia Russo to stay. She was going to stay at Manchester United. The deal was agreed, only for the club to go back on several conditions leading to the deal to collapse. That was a huge loss for Manchester United, but I don't think Russo is the only case. From the sources that I've spoken to, there is a general sense of frustration regarding poor communication in terms of budget and strategy for contract renewals or signings or transfer fees. And that causes delays. There's a lot of back and forth, checking with various people. It's quite a convoluted process at Manchester United. I always think it's a bit like a millefeuille, you know, the lots of thin layers of pastry that you have to go through.
You had to bring a French reference in there, didn't you?
Oh yeah, I have to. It just seems like a Manchester United-ism, this navigating who to speak to. And that caused frustration and removes confidence in dealing with the club. Now, you know, that's not the case for every transfer. Some transfers in the summer window, when, you know, it was deadline day and Manchester United need to sign, things happened very quickly. And within a week, they bought in players. But they spent the most of any WSL club and they did their business very late.
Andy Mitten also said on that Talk of the Devils podcast that you were on about the negotiations for Onabatie as well, who they also lost the right back last summer on a free transfer. She went to Barcelona. They said the negotiations lasted 6 months. United improved their offer 6 times. There were frustrations from both sides from the start. So it's not, as you say, it's not just Russo. And I think what fans will be worried about is what happens with Mary Earps, because, you know, they've got one of the world's, or the world's best goalkeeper, who could potentially leave on a free transfer this summer. Her commercial potential as well as her footballing potential, it could be a huge loss if they missed out on her because of all these issues.
I think Earps is in a really tricky situation because these contract negotiations have dragged on for over 18 months, like after the Euros 2022. That was when to get a deal signed. And the problem is that where does she go? You know, Chelsea have so many goalkeepers. They don't need another one. Although, you know, there might be some change in the summer there. But Mary Earps is going to be number one, and Hannah Hampton seems pretty certain for their number one at the moment. Arsenal, reported by Tom Garrow of The Telegraph, that they're interested in Daphne van Domselaar as, you know, competing with Manuela Zinsberger. So it seems that Arsenal's interest has cooled off. Manchester City, Kiara Keating seems to be firmly number one. So Earps's value is in England. Now, she switched agencies at the end of last year with a French agent, AMV Sports, and news came out of their of PSG's interest. But Earps, you know, people shout about Mary Earps in England. That's who the BBC Sports Personality of the Year is. Her value's not in France or further afield. So it's going to be really interesting to see where Mary Earps ends up come the end of the season.
The question is, would she ever consider anything outside the top four if those positions are already taken? You know, might she be forced to if there's significant issues at Man United? I mean, another thing that you raise in your report, Charlotte, is the high staff turnover as well, kind of the system behind the team. If she's not happy with that, could she then leave? I mean, tell us more about what you found out about that.
Yeah, Manchester United have had several departures, whether that's physios or a doctor. Head of women's football, Polly Bancroft, announced that she was leaving to become CEO of Grimsby Town. And that is unsettling for players. Now, Manchester United says that they have replaced those people with interim positions, and inevitably with a start-up kind of team, there is going to be more volatility. They're aiming to stabilise that. But if lots of people are leaving from your company, you do think, hey, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And you've spoken before about kind of Martin Ho leaving and how that left a gap in the quality of coaching as well. We had a lot of listeners, Natalie, Adam and Lot, all asking if there's any movement on who's going to replace Polly Bancroft. I don't know if we've got any idea of that. I suppose her, even the fact that she has moved, says something, to become CEO of a League Two club from Manchester United.
Yeah, I think she'll have more control as CEO. Polly Bancroft was in charge of the day-to-day running of the women's team and held those decisions. But ultimately, she reported to the director of football, John Murta, and his right-hand man, Andy O'Boyle. Ineos had met Bancroft, and they're looking at potential candidates for her replacement. So again, the decision will be with them.
We're going to get back to Ineos in a second. But first, I just wanted to ask Charlotte, what was Mark Skinner's response to your findings in your special report?
Yeah, I asked Skinner on Thursday about whether he had any concerns and whether the players had raised those or he had spoken to the players about the report. And he said, we will obviously have questions around any topic that's brought to our attention. But he also said it's important to have balance. And we're never going to report all the good things that happen at our club because nobody wants to hear good news. And that's a quote from him. And he expanded, no one wants the shiny stuff, the good news. It's headlines are mostly focusing on negative things. And he said that in life, that was his clarification. But I actually disagree with women's football. I think I said this on the Talk of the Devils podcast. I think we're guilty of cheerleading too much and not wanting to criticise given the need for kind of growth of the game. But, you know, criticism is healthy for things to change. And Tom Gary from The Telegraph then followed up and said, OK, Mark, what are we not reporting? What good news is there? And Mark Skinner said, well, we've got a new fantastic building, alluding to the new training facilities at the start of the season. We've got Ineos coming in to re-energise our club. And we are the biggest club in the world that has fantastic things that I see on a daily basis. So he didn't actually allude to his team at all or on the pitch or, if somebody said that, you go, that's the club. That's not really about your women's team. You do have to appreciate that Manchester United is a relatively young team. And I get that. It is what they describe as a startup. And Skinner said there will be teething problems. But structurally and organisationally, United has so much potential. And I think if they get those things sorted, then they will be a better oiled machine.
I mean, oiled is good with anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much potential with United, isn't there? I think that's the thing. It's not that we expected them to fly straight away, having been formed in 2018 and only reaching the WSL in 2019. It's that they have so much potential to go so far and it's just not quite being realised yet, but maybe it will be in the future.
Absolutely. And last year was an outlier, right? They exceeded expectations. So then you're measuring them against last year. And they had their, as Mark Skinner said, the best season. To then to replicate that is really difficult.
So let's talk about Ineos then coming in. We've had listener Kuda saying, is there any news from Ineos? Do they actually intend to invest in the women's team or is it Glazers 2.0? Have we seen any signs of change already? Are the appointments ones that might help the women's team at all? Dan, any thoughts on that?
From conversations with Ineos, you know, they will point to the fact that they've hired Omar Berada to be the new chief exec. He comes from Manchester City, who obviously have a hugely successful women's team. So they would use that as an example of these people have experience in that field and they will continue driving the women's team forward. Beyond that, they're going through the process of trying to hire Dan Ashworth to be the sporting director. Again, has experience, knows quite a lot about the women's game too. So that, you know, again, they point to that and think, well, that shows us taking it seriously. However, I think you have to be realistic. Their priority will be the men's team, right? That is, you know, it's going to be the men's team. And then what I think will be important to know, and, you know, they've not spoken about this on the record yet, is kind of just how high up are the women in terms of a priority for them. The impression I get is that Sir Dave Brailsford is, you know, he is an active presence at Carrington. He's not just kind of walking past the women's department and going straight to the men's section. However, you know, it is clear that their priority right now is the men's team. But as Charlotte alludes to in the piece, they are going through a look and learn is what they describe it as, phase where they're, you know, Brailsford will be having chats with the relevant departments across the academy, the women's team, the men's team, listening to what their complaints are, listening to what works, listening to what doesn't work. And it's his job effectively to put all of that down on paper and come up with a plan with the executive leadership team when they're all in place.
I think Dan Ashworth could potentially be a really interesting appointment, especially from the women's perspective, because he briefly worked with former England manager Hope Powell at the FA. And I was reading an article that he did with our Brighton reporter, Andy Naylor, back in 2020. So 4 years ago, way before the Euros and the whole Euros euphoria. And Ashworth said he's passionate, supportive of the quickly expanding women's game and applauded its growing popularity even before many did. So that would be a big boost for the women's team. Regarding kind of Ineos and the tangible points, Tom Crotty, he's been an Ineos director since 2001. So he is the designated Ineos representative on the Manchester United Women's Football Board. So he will be the kind of link between the women's unit and the club.
Dan, what do we know about Tom Crotty?
You always kind of see him with Sir Jim Ratcliffe. He is a director at Ineos. He sits on the board. His background is in communications. So yeah, he is their director of communications. So it is interesting that he's going to be the kind of representative on, you know, on the women's team. However, he's been at Ineos from the beginning, right? So he has the trust of Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Sir Dave Brailsford. So yeah, he will essentially be feeding into them.
Yeah, so Jim Ratcliffe, you know, when he was asked in the media roundtable about the women's team, he said, you know, if the team has a Manchester United badge on it, then it's expected to be successful and winning trophies. So the proof will be in the pudding, right? You can talk all about this, but when push comes to shove, are they going to be best in class across the men's, women's and academy? And as Dan alluded to, it's, you know, it'd be unrealistic to say the women's team is priority. Absolutely not. Stabilising the men's team is the priority. But if you go out and say all these things, then you have to deliver because you said it in public now.
What about the stadium? They've announced grand plans to build this new stadium, kind of the Wembley of the North, but it doesn't seem like the women's team are going to be playing there regularly, does it? Tell us more about what they have planned in terms of the stadium.
So Jim Ratcliffe did say they're reducing the capacity of Old Trafford, make it into a community asset. So, and I quote, the ladies team, the academy teams can play there.
We do not like that, ladies team. No, no, no. We are not ladies. We are women.
It gave me the ick, really. It's like Manchester United women.
Yeah, it's an ick.
Just call them the women's team.
Yeah.
And I mean, that is a huge improvement, right? You can't knock that down. The women's team play at Lee Sports Village, about 25 kilometres outside of the city centre. They're happy with the pitch there, but it's a real pain to get to. So you can't knock someone down to say, yeah, we'll reduce the size of Old Trafford and you can have that. But it's not their dedicated stadium. It's not going to be designed specifically for a women's football audience, like some teams like Lyon or other teams are planning to do or having a bespoke stadium like Brighton. So we'll see.
I was just looking up tickets for that FA Cup semi-final, Man United, Chelsea, and thinking, I wish they were at Old Trafford already because it would, or maybe they will play that game at Old Trafford, but it's a lot easier to get to. Right, so before we round off this discussion, is there anything else we need to look out for in this review by Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos and kind of what are the next stages that will be coming up?
I think that will continue kind of going on behind the scenes. You feel that any real change, you will have to wait until the summer, until their new chief exec's in. You know, we don't know how long Dan Ashworth's going to be on gardening leave for. They need to sort out a compensation package with Newcastle for that. Once these people start getting into these key roles, then I think you're going to start seeing more and more changes. You know, the immediate changes you see at the moment are Ineos are visible, whereas the Glazers, you know, they're not visible at all. They're kind of just in America doing their thing. You know, Ineos so far have been accountable to a certain extent. How accountable they are going forward, you know, I doubt Ratcliffe's going to be sitting down every few months kind of briefing the media as he did after the investment went through. But for me, I think that once these key people get into these important roles, that's when you're going to start seeing changes.
Charlotte, I think it will be very interesting in light of your report, seeing what happens in the summer, especially in the transfer window and how they kind of deal with those internal structural issues in that window. Do you think for the women's team, then it's a several year project that we're looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. Ineos don't want to give fans false expectations. They are taking a gradual approach. there are no plans to splurge the cash in the summer transfer window for the women's team. And Sir Jim Ratcliffe said United want to knock Manchester City and Liverpool off their perch. And I understand that to be around a kind of 3 or 4 year medium to long-term plan. The same applies for the women's team. They want their women's team to be a real kind of a force and compete with Chelsea, Manchester City and Arsenal, but not only compete, but beat them to trophies and win trophies. But again, that's looking at a 3 or 4 year plan.
Well, for the next 3 or 4 years, I'm sure Dan and Charlotte will be covering this. So definitely head to The Athletic to check out all their reporting. Thank you so much for joining me, Charlotte and Dan.
Thanks, Sophie.
Thank you.
Don't go anywhere because we're flying to Italy next.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to Full Time Europe from The Athletic.
Over in Italy, Joe Montemurro, who you'll remember won the league with Arsenal, has stepped down as head coach of Juventus. So to find out more about what happened, we've got Italian journalist Lucia Pirola joining us from Milan. Ciao, Lucia.
Hi, everyone.
Having a look at what Montemurro has achieved with Juventus in the 3 years since he's been there, he joined in 2021. He won a league title, 2 Italian Cups, 2 Super Cups, but it hasn't been enough, has it? Why has he been sacked?
Juventus used to be the best team in Italy, and since it's now not the best team, was Roma is now at the top of the league, you can definitely tell that there is something that needs to be fixed. And of course, they started with the coach, Montemurro. It's not something actually out of the blue or so much unexpected here in Italy, because as you said, he was appointed as the head coach a few years ago. And the first year, we can say everything was great. The relationship with the team was great, and the relationship with the board was great as well. But what happened with time was that the relationship with Joe Montemurro and Stefano Braghin, for example, who is head of Juventus Women, was not the greatest relationship for all the time. And in the moment that Montemurro was sacked, Braghin was renewed on the same day, which kind of makes everything clearer. If you think about the future, it was going to be either Montemurro or Braghin. And of course, the board chose the director, Braghin.
What about in terms of the results on the pitch?
Juventus started off very well in the last years, but then last 2 years, they were not at the top of the league, as I said. And also, this year, they didn't qualify for the Women's Champions League, which was something very big for the team because they were aiming to raise the bar, not only in Italy, but in Europe as well. So their loss with Eintracht Frankfurt in the qualifying stage was not very well accepted by the team and by the board as well. The final straw was the loss they suffered against Fiorentina in the semi-finals, in the first leg of the semi-finals of Coppa Italia, which is the League Cup here in Italy. And we already had the final match day of the regular season. Then we are going with the second part of the season. And Roma is, I think, 8 or 9 points ahead. So, yeah, Juventus is having a very hard time trying to win the league. So they are focusing also on the Coppa Italia, but they lost the first leg of the semifinals. Between the first leg and the second leg, he was sacked because of, like, you are trying to give a signal to the team, but spoiler alert, they didn't win the second leg. So they are also out of the final of the Coppa Italia championship.
They have at least won one cup this season, haven't they? They won the Supercoppa in January. They've also been struggling to replace some of their big names who are perhaps not in their prime anymore, haven't they? What kind of names are we talking about there?
For example, Saragama, who used to be the captain. Well, she's still the captain, but for example, a few weeks ago, she had her last match with the Italian national team. And probably that's going to happen with Juventus as well. And I'm talking about her or Girelli or Bonansea, which are huge names here in Italy. But of course, they cannot play forever. So yeah, Juventus is facing some struggles from this point of view. But at the same time, Roma had like a huge growth in a span of just a few years. And it's not something unexpected because they've always been very focused on the women's team. They have had huge investments on the women's team. And I can say that they also have always chosen the right players. They have had some big names joining the team. I think about Kumagai, just to name one. But at the same time, they have players like Hove, who is doing like huge stuff here in the league. And not only in the league, she's showing herself also in Champions League. So they had like the right choices on the pitch. But let me say also off the pitch, they are showing themselves as a huge team. Their social media are always on point. They also had more like a movie about the winning of the championship last year, and which shows that this success is not something that just comes out of the blue, but it's something they have worked really hard for.
We'll be keeping an eye on that, definitely. And keeping an eye on Juventus as well. Obviously, assistant coach Giuseppe Zappella will be managing them on a temporary basis until they find a replacement. Thank you so much for that update from Italy. Grazie mille.
Thank you for having me.
The regular season may be over, but Juventus have a chance to redeem themselves in the playoffs, which start on Saturday. And that's not the only thing happening this weekend.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You're listening to Full Time Europe with Sophie Penny.
The NWSL, the American Soccer League, kicks off this weekend. So we've got The Athletic's senior US soccer writer Meg Linehan joining me for a quick preview. Meg, how excited are you for the regular season to kick off?
It feels surreal that it's already happening. It feels like I was just in San Diego watching that just truly unhinged championship game. And here we are again.
We should start with Gotham FC, who won the league last season. It was a bit of a surprise when they won, wasn't it? Because they were last the season before. Do we think they're going to be the team to watch this season, or is it likely to fluctuate again for them?
Yeah, I think the target is on for Gotham, but that's also a position that they have embraced. But they went out, you know, they won the championship, won it in a pretty dramatic fashion, and then went out and added a whole bunch of international talent, U.S. women's national team players. So Rose Lavelle, Emily Sonnet, Tierna Davidson, and Crystal Dunn. So you have these massive additions to the team. You have a team that's at Red Bull Arena outside New York. You have this team that has grand ambitions of taking over New York City. And now they have to back all of it up. And I think what we have historically seen in the NWSL, you know, we have had super teams that have been built in a longer project, not quite like this. I don't think we've ever actually seen anything like this in one off season. But when teams have gone out and tried to kind of acquire talent in this fashion, I think generally we have then seen the performance in that regular season and it's been a little flat. So it's going to be interesting if they can maybe buck kind of the, like, we're working with very vague sense of data here, but that is sort of the expectation of you look great on paper, now go out and prove it. And that's going to be the storyline, I think, of the season, at least early on.
There's two new teams in the league this season. It's gone from 12 teams to 14, Bay FC and Utah Royals FC. And Bay FC have made some pretty big signings, haven't they? Rachel Kundinanji for that world record fee of about $785,000. What about that international talent that's coming through? I mean, there'll be some recognizable names, weren't there, from people who perhaps watch less of the NWSL, but are familiar with the WSL.
Yeah, I mean, I think the NWSL has always had this sense of, okay, we want to go and we want to compete in the global market. And I think that has really happened this year. Obviously, Portland Thorns bringing over Jessie Fleming, getting her one final season with Christine Sinclair in Portland. But it's also, you know, I think one of the big signings that is happening kind of last minute ahead of the season, Orlando Pride are also going out and competing in the global market and signing Barbara Banda. So not only have we seen this kind of influx from talent from across the world, but also we're seeing a very specific influx of talent from African nations, which I think is honestly really exciting. Of like, I don't know what it was about the NWSL where every team suddenly scouted Zambia, but but that is kind of this narrative of, okay, we're seeing teams be a little more aggressive in international signings and figuring out how do they fit. The NWSL has extended the amount of international players any one team can have. So for a league that, you know, their whole narrative is they want to be the best in the world. And for a long time, they were just kind of allowed to say that. And now they really have to prove it. And this feels like a very concrete first step to me in saying, okay, we've gone out and we've found some of the best. We've paid these big transfer fees as, you know, 14 teams across the league. And now we get to actually watch it happen. And what will be interesting is, you know, how these players who are maybe allowed a little more time on the ball, who are used to maybe a less transitional style of soccer, now come in and get to experience the madness that is the NWSL.
The last thing I want to talk to you about is the amount of new coaches that we have in the league this season. Is it half the teams are going to have new coaches or something like that? I read in one of your pieces. And obviously, Jonathan Giraldes is coming over from Barcelona mid-season as well.
Right. I mean, I feel like the coaching carousel has been kind of this nonstop story in the NWSL. And part of that, honestly, and this is not necessarily a fun backstory, but coming out of the abuse scandal across the league in 2021. So there has been this sense of like a lot of coaching turnover and turnover and turnover. But, you know, it's not just Giraldes coming over from Barcelona. It's also Vlatko Andonovski departing the U.S. women's national team, this mutual agreement post-World Cup, and then landing at the most obvious spot. Everybody kind of was looking for him to land in Kansas City, his adopted hometown. So it's really hard to know what to expect. There are definitely some folks who have been around this league. I think about Laura Harvey, basically since the beginning, departed briefly to go over to the U.S. National team system and then came back still with Seattle. And then there are folks who are going to be completely brand new to it. But one of the coaches that I'm really going to be watching is not necessarily one of the new ones. It's Juan Carlos Amoros, who won with Gotham last season, was coach of the year, and, you know, brought in a great tactics guy alongside of him, and now is going to have to figure out how to repeat and repeat with different talent and greater expectations. And I'm really curious because I think they did, you know, there was a lot made of the chess matches that Gotham would engineer out of some of these games. And now the challenge level is cranked at least 3 or 4 degrees of difficulty higher. So yes, a whole bunch of new coaches. It's going to be very interesting to see if we get kind of this jump in the NWSL, because I think the tactical growth of this league has not always been something that is like really high on the, you know, what makes the NWSL great list. And this season is maybe a potential for that to move the needle a little bit.
And in terms of the opening weekend, then, which game will you be looking out for? I know we've got the Challenge Cup on the Friday, so that's with the reigning champions Gotham FC, and then the Shield winning San Diego Wave, and then the regular season starts on Saturday, doesn't it?
Yes, so we'll have Melanie from our side on the ground at Challenge Cup out at Gotham. It's going to be a chilly night in New Jersey, to say the least. But what the great news for Gotham, too, is that they opened up the upper bowl at Red Bull. So it should be a good, crowded night. Great first sign for Gotham this season. I'll actually be out in Kansas City for the opening of their new stadium, purpose-built for women's soccer.
Are you going to have to pay for parking?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I'm actually probably going to walk from the hotel as a little bit of a test of some of the alternate modes of transportation for those who might not be following the ins and outs of the drama of the NWSL. Kansas City got in a little bit of hot water since the parking pass for season ticket holders, which was kind of a limited edition parking pass too, was about $800 for the entire season. So in many cases, more than the tickets than these people had actually bought. Yes, Kansas City versus Portland, though, I think the two great teams, these are two teams that love playing against each other. I mean, the first game of the NWSL in 2013 was Kansas City and Portland in Kansas City. So there's a nice sort of historical circle happening here in that new stadium. But I think a whole bunch of really good matchups that first weekend. It's just kind of, you know, now we've got 14 teams instead of 12, so we've got an extra game every weekend, and I am still wrapping my head around that.
Oh, well, I hope you enjoy it, and we've definitely only just scratched the surface there of all the preview and all the NWSL material, so people should definitely head to The Athletic to read what Meg's written and what all of the other US writers are writing on the NWSL. But thank you so much for that preview, Meg. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
For more on the NWSL and our full-time column, search The Athletic. To sign up, it's just $1.99 a month for 12 months. Go to theathletic.com/WSL. There's just one more thing to do before we end this podcast. We need you to leave us a rating and a review and hit follow on your podcast feed. And if you've got any questions like the ones we answered on Man United, send them in via email to fte@theathletic.com or on socials at TheAthleticFC on Twitter and Instagram. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to Full Time Europe, part of the Athletic Football Podcast Network. The producer was Sophie Penny, and the executive producer was Abby Patterson. To discover and listen to other great Athletic podcasts just like this one, including our brand new daily football briefing, search for The Athletic on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.
The Athletic.